This is Deborah Beck, professor of ancient Greek literature in the Department of Classics at the University of Texas at Austin. My students and I are excited to welcome you to our podcast, Musings in Greek Literature. Welcome to Sophocles' Antigone in 2019, a podcast series created by the students in an advanced Greek course on Sophocles' play Antigone at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Deborah Beck, the course instructor. This first episode of our class podcast introduces our series, both for the students who will be making the rest of the episodes, and for you, our listeners out there in podcast land. Each of our episodes will feature a member of our class talking about a particular passage from the play that they've recently taught. We'll also be talking about our experiences with talking about Sophocles' Antigone, both with one another in class and with you all in a podcast. Our series assumes a general familiarity with the story of Antigone and with classical Greek, but each episode provides a bit of background and context for the specific passage it talks about. The organization of the series follows the sequence of the play, but each episode is designed to be freestanding. So it should be possible to listen to any episode on its own or to listen to the episodes in any order. After all the student podcast episodes are complete, I'll be back at the end of our series to reflect on the experience and what we all learned, both from reading the Antigone together and from doing these podcasts. Sophocles' play Antigone is one of the most widely read Greek tragedies. It describes the last stages of a long series of catastrophes involving the family of Oedipus, who unwittingly brings to fruition an oracle that he would kill his father Laius and marry his mother, Jocasta. After Oedipus kills Laius at a crossroads, not knowing who he is, Oedipus arrives in the city of Thebes, frees it from the burden of the Sphinx, who had been eating any passerby who could not solve a riddle she posed to them, and then he marries the widowed Theban queen, Jocasta, with whom he has several children. In Sophocles' play, the children of Oedipus and Jocasta are two sons, Eteocles and Polynices, and two daughters, Ismene and Antigone. When Oedipus learns that he has killed his own father Laius and married his mother Jocasta, a process of enlightenment depicted in Sophocles' play Oedipus the King, Oedipus blinds himself and renounces the kingship of Thebes. After a series of events that varies in different versions of the myth, Oedipus's two sons end up on opposite sides of a civil war at Thebes. The events in the Antigone take place immediately after the end of this civil war, in which Polynices attacks the city along with several other warriors in order to claim the kingship from his brother Eteocles. This attack on the city is foiled and both brothers are killed. Now Creon, the brother-in-law of Oedipus, who becomes the king of Thebes, decrees that Eteocles be buried with all due ceremony and respect, while the Thebans are forbidden to bury Polynices because his attack on Thebes makes him a traitor. The play opens when Antigone tells her sister Ismene about Creon's decree and announces her intention to bury Polynices despite Creon's prohibition on doing so. Before we continue, it's important to note that the three surviving plays that Sophocles wrote about the Oedipus family fortunes were written completely out of order in relation to the mythological story. So, the play Antigone, which comes last of the three in mythological terms, was written first, probably in the late 440s. Oedipus the King is a play of uncertain date, but it might have been written in the 420s, and the Oedipus at Colonus, whose events fall between those of Oedipus the King and those in Antigone, was composed last of all, being performed posthumously several years after Sophocles died in 405 BCE. So we cannot say that aspects of the Oedipus the King foreshadow the play Antigone, even though the story in the play Oedipus the King precedes the story in the play Antigone. While Sophocles' Antigone tells a well-known mythological story, whose basic outlines would have been familiar to audiences at the Athenian religious festivals at which Sophocles' tragedies were performed, Sophocles makes several innovations to the story. Perhaps the most important of these is the importance of Antigone herself in the tale. Unlike her warlike brothers, who make regular appearances in the many surviving tellings of the war at Thebes after Oedipus leaves the throne, Antigone has left very little trace in either the literary or the visual record before Sophocles' play. In his Antigone, Sophocles created one of literary history's most memorable heroes, and the play has been reperformed and reconceived again and again by individuals and societies grappling with the questions raised in the play about power, justice, law, and right. I'm looking forward to hearing more about this in future students' episodes. The prologue of the play, which is Aristotle's name for the part of a tragedy before the chorus enters and sings their first song, takes the form of a dialogue between the sisters Antigone and Ismene. The prologue of an Athenian tragedy resembles the brief "In Our Last Episode" montage that each episode of a serial TV show would tend to often features before the opening credits. Both the montage and the prologue explain to the audience where the story belongs within the larger context, in the case of a tragedy, of traditional mythological stories that the audience would be familiar with already. So, at the beginning of our play, Antigone and Ismene discuss the civil war at Thebes, the deaths of their two brothers at each other's hands, and the terrible decree of Creon about the corpse of Polynices, which, if followed, would leave their brother without the burial rites that were so culture important to Greeks throughout their history. The two sisters have very different reactions to the situation in which they now find themselves, and the dialogue between them highlights both these differences and the things they share as sisters. The first words of the play establish the deep bonds between the two sisters. So Antigone, in the first verse, addresses her sister, "O koinon auta delphon ismenes kara," literally, "common, same sibling, head of Ismene." Ismenes kara, head of Ismene, is just a kind of stylistically elevated tragic way to call Ismene by name. The two adjectives that describe her, koinon and auta delphon, create a unity and a tie between the two sisters, within and against which their differences will unfold over the next 100 verses of the prologue, and indeed over the course of the entire play. The word koinos, common, refers in ancient Greek not only to things shared between individuals, as we see in this particular verse, but specifically also to the things that the inhabitants of a city share in common in their public life, as opposed to the private individual concerns that ancient Greek describes as idios, which is the origin of our word idiot. So Antigone's language here evokes not just the bonds of sisterhood, but also the bonds of statehood that tie groups of people together. The prefix out, which we see in auta delphon, often simply intensifies the rest of the word. But in the play Antigone, out and similar forms are used again and again to express the intensity and sometimes also the horror of the doubled incestuous bonds that unite members of the Oedipus family. Later in the prologue, for example, Ismene describes Polynices and Eteocles killing each other in verses 56 and 57 as autoctonunte to talai poro moron koinon kat ergasant ap ale loin heroin. So she says, "Same or self-killing, wretched pair, they brought to fruition a common fate with their hands raised against each other." Here again, as in the first verse of the play, the adjective koinos describes a pair of Oedipus's children who are united by a unique fate, even as they passionately differ from one another. This description of the two brothers uses several dual forms. And dual is a number that is neither singular nor plural that is used in Greek when there are two of something. Here, almost the entire description consists of dual words, auktoktonunte to talai poro, kat ergasant ep alleloin heroin. There are many examples of the dual in the Antigone because they underline the awful and unique sameness and unity of these siblings who share only with each other the distinction of having multiple family relationships to each other at once. As a parenthetical note, I tried to work out what exactly these relationships were in addition to being siblings, but I got so confused that I had to give it up. At the same time, these forms, the dual and the out prefix, bring forward the horror of civil war, in which those who should be closest to each other become bitter enemies instead. So the Antigone introduces this issue simultaneously as a conflict between two individuals, two brothers, and also as something that is could afflict the entire city. We never meet the two brothers, since they have died the day before the play begins, but the dialogue between the sisters Ismene and Antigone opens the play with two quite different perspectives on the conflict between Creon's edict and their filial obligation to bury their brother Polynices' corpse. From the first verse of the play, Antigone is a passionate, single-minded character. She does not create elaborate rhetorical devices to reinforce her points. For instance, when she laments that there is no suffering that has not befallen their family, in verses 4 and 5 in her first speech, she describes the suffering with a list of no fewer than 4 closely related adjectives, ut algenon, ut aterion, ut aischron, ut atimon, neither painful, nor baneful, nor shameful, nor dishonored. And those sort of rhymey, echoey words in the first 3 adjectives is an intentional translation choice to reflect the similar sound of those Greek adjectives. Antigone has decided that her duty to her brother and to the gods requires her to bury the corpse of her brother Polynices, and her explanations to Ismene of Creon's proclamation against burying him are predicated on the assumption that any sensible sister would ignore Creon's decree. Antigone says that not burying her brother would be a betrayal of him. In verse 46, she says, "Producer, I would betray him if I didn't bury him." Ismene, in contrast, takes a clear-eyed view of the limitations they both face as women and also as subjects of Creon as their king. Ismene also cares about their family obligations, but she's more concerned than Antigone is about the consequences of disobedience. In her response to Antigone's news, at verses 49 and following, she constructs well-ordered arguments about their situation, linking her points together with logical words, as in verse 53, she starts her second point with epeta, next. And then in verse 55, she starts her third point with triton, third. Ismene uses words for think a lot, beginning her speech to the passionate Antigone with the command, consider phroneson, verse 49, and saying at verses 61 and 62 that they have to consider that they are women, en noein chretuta men gunaich, hati efumen, hos pros andras umachumena. It is necessary to consider en noein that we are women, not suited by nature to fight against men. Later in the play, Creon will take a similar position. It's clear that he is much angrier and more threatened about Antigone's actions because she is a woman than he would be if she were a man. Antigone will have no truck with what she sees as cowardly and disgraceful reservations such as these. But nonetheless, Antigone ends the prologue at verse 99 by reaffirming both her disagreement with the thoughtless course of action that Antigone has chosen, and also her love for Antigone. So Ismene's last words in the prologue are, "Anus men erche, tois philoist orthos phile." Go ahead and be thoughtless. Anus men erche, but you are rightly dear to your friends. The correlative structure of men de, which links together the two halves of this verse, emphasizes that Ismene's disagreement with Antigone about how they should respond to Creon's edict has no effect on her love for her sister. So the prologue both begins and ends with the bonds between the sisters, Ismene and Antigone. And in between, the prologue shows how different the two sisters are and how much separates their ideas about what they owe both to the dead and to their king. In our next episode, Rachel will talk about the first choral ode, which introduces yet a third perspective on the situation at Thebes that differs from both of the two sisters. Thank you so much for tuning in. This concludes the first episode of Sophocles' Antigone in 2019. I'm Deborah Beck, and my students and I hope you'll tune in to further episodes of our podcast. If you have any thoughts, please leave us a comment. Thank you so much.